Hey, Dan here, dialing in another twat. Today I'm going to talk about compiling software under Linux, and which, you know, is pretty much compiling software under the BSDs or other Unix derivatives, using primarily the GNU utilities. Why would you want to compile software instead of using your distributions package management system? Well, for instance, you might want a newer release of a software package. For an example might be something like Inkscape or Scribus, which are under a heavy development, and they release a new software every couple of months, and your distribution may not be keeping up with that release cycle, and it has something you might want to try out. A few months back, Inkscape incorporated Whiteboard through Jobber client, and that interests me, so I had to go out there and compile it myself to give this a test, and see how it actually worked. So, you know, there's one reason right there. If you're using some software that you might be interested in may not be in your package manager's repository. Usually Debian, Ubuntu, SUSE, Fedora have pretty large package repositories, but yet some of the more obscure software you might be inclined to use may be missing from those repositories, requiring you to compile the software yourself. I always recommend trying out your distributions version before compiling the software, just, you know, for stability purposes and the testing purposes. And barring that, you know, it's always fun to compile your own software. Now, before you can begin to compile software, you got to be aware of the software's dependencies and some requirements on the actual distribution yourself in order to be able to compile the software. You're going to need developmental libraries, and when you do standard installations of like SUSE, Ubuntu, I think even Debian and Fedora, you may not be getting developmental versions of the libraries. You're just getting the libraries that you could use to run applications that don't have the developmental files and libraries necessary. You're also going to need the GNU GCC compiler, probably AutoMake and AutoConf packages installed, all the, you know, stuff that is going to be required to actually make and prepare and compile software to install on your system. Also, you're probably going to need kernel header files. Those are key for some software like that requires maybe building kernel modules or stuff like drivers. For instance, the Linux WLAN NG project for wireless capability requires that you actually have the header files installed before you can compile the software for the kernel. So, you know, you're probably going to want those. And you're going to have to consult your distributions, package repositories, and installation medias documentation for how to get those installed. If you chose that during the installation of your distribution, you should be okay. Otherwise, you're going to have to just use apt-get or yum or whatever your package management is in order to install that software. Now, a slim distribution like Slackware, they have all the software they install. Typically, if you install developmental libraries and developmental software, the library that it actually builds has the developmental features built right into it. So, whereas on Slackware, if you installed libpng, you're getting the full thing with the developmental stuff inside. But under like Ubuntu, if you install libpng, you're going to get just the libraries with the developmental stuff stripped out. And you'd actually have to install the libpng-dev package before you get the developmental files. So be aware of that. Once you have gotten the proper developmental tools onto your system, the next step is to actually go and get the sources of the software you want to install. So while you're downloading the source tarball or zip file or pulling it down from CVS or Subversion, whatever, take the time to look at the software's website and read any installation documentation or requirement. Pay particular attention to software requirements. That's the easiest place to start looking right off the bat. Typically, on the download page or on the installation documentation under the installation, it'll tell you what software you need to have before you can actually compile the application. Its dependencies is what it comes down to. For instance, if you wanted to get an SDL game, if you're interested in running a game in SDL Frozen Bubble comes to mind. You're going to make sure that you actually have the required dependencies, the SDL libraries. I think it requires Perl SDL and SDL-net. So you're going to want to make sure you have all those libraries and dependencies already installed on your system. Again, consult your package manager. If they aren't available, you're going to have to go get the sources for those dependencies and compile those and, you know, be aware of any of those dependencies it may require before you can actually compile the software you want. So start at the software's website and then, you know, work your way from there. After you get the software downloaded onto your system, you're going to fire up a terminal or go to the console, and you're going to have to extract it, the archive, the sources from the archive using tar or unzip or, you know, your preferred extraction utility. Now, you can do this from, like, Conqueror or an archive extraction utility out of GNOME or KDE or whatever. But I recommend, you know, going straight to the command line, because that's where you're going to have to get to actually compile the software and continue on with the build process. Prior to extracting it, if there's MD5 checksum files available for download, you might want to utilize those to make sure that the source that you're pulling down wasn't tampered with and the MD5 checksums match if you're all about the security. So be aware of that. And, you know, now it's time to get into the nitty-gritty of it. You've extracted your sources. You've looked at the documentation on the website. The next thing to look for is the documentation in the actual sources. Sometimes the documentation on the website may be lagging behind the newer versions of the software, and you'll actually find the up-to-date information in the files included with the source. Start off by looking for a file called install. Really simple. Typically, it's all caps. An install file, read that, start reading through it, see, you know, make sure you have the dependencies, see if there's any unique situations for the software, what they recommend. Typically, it's a three-stage process. You're going to run the configure script, you're going to run make, and then make install. Actually, sudo or su-c make install, because, you know, security in mind, you want to run all this and, you know, configure it and compile it as a non-root user, and then when it comes down to installing it, now's the time to switch to root to install it. So bear that in mind. But, you know, read that install file. Sometimes it's informative. Sometimes there's nothing in there. And it says, well, read, you know, the installation instructions in the doc directory. So go in the doc directory under the sources and look for installation instructions in there. Sometimes those files are HTML files. I highly recommend using a browser like Lynx, L-Y-N-X, or Lynx, L-I-N-K-S, which are both text-based browsers, to quickly open those files and read through the documentation instead of having to go over to Conqueror or Firefox and browsing through your file system to get to the source directory right there. A little side note about where to extract the sources. Some documentation says, hey, you should usually install, you know, extract packages and stuff like sources into, like, USR, SRC. Directory, but I just do it in my home directory or in a separate data directory or something like that, where I keep a lot of my sources and do all my builds from there. You could install it into the USR source if you really want to, but then you're going to have to be root to be able to compile and begin the rest of the process. Or you could also use the TMP directory, but that might get wiped out if you reboot the system, so you lose the sources and the files. In addition to the install directory and the docs, anything under the docs directory, look for a README file. That could be pretty informative, too. In some instances, the installation instructions may be in the README file. As your first couple of compiles that you do yourself, I strongly recommend reading the documentation, but as you get more familiar with the software and the compilation process, you know, the quick skim through the documentation, because there's going to be a lot of repetition between different software packages, because some of the, there's a lot of standard key points that are repeated over and over through all the documentation in there. So, just get a little familiar with the actual process and reading all the directions, which is always a good idea anyhow, for at least your first couple of installs. The next step is typically you're going to have to run the configure script. Now, it should be at the root of the sources. It should be an executable file, so it's just as simple as putting .configure. Actually, I'm sorry, it's a .configure. And that'll kick off in a configuration script. It'll probe your system for the necessary libraries and, you know, paths and everything. and build the actual make file so that you can start building or compiling a source. If the configure script will also check for libraries and library versions and required software, and at this point is where you'll typically see a lot of stuff failing. If you don't have a dependency met or a right version of a library, it's going to drop out and say, you know, hey, libSDL is version 1.3, you know, we're looking for version 2. So, you know, you got to go get this dependency before you can install the software. Sometimes that actual script to dump out, it might be difficult to know where it actually failed. What the configure script does is, in addition to listing the stuff out on the line, it also creates a file called config.log, and you can go into the config.log and get a little more verbose information and see where stuff failed during the configuration process. It might give you a little more information if you're confused about, you know, why did the configure script not complete successfully. Look at the config.log file, and which might provide you with some more information. In addition to just running the configure script, you should always try /configure and then --help, which will list all the parameters that configuration script will accept. Now, I say all of them, but take that with a grain of salt. All the important ones or specialized ones specifically for that package should be listed in there. There's probably some options you can pass to the configuration script that may not be listed, but that's a good place to start. For instance, primarily you might want to change something like the prefix directory. Now, the prefix option, by default, software gets installed into the USR local file. And again, standards, file system standards for Linux and I think Unix in general, the USR local subdirectories are reserved for software that the system administrator is going to install. Just the USR directories is where you're going to see a lot of the software by the distribution. USR locals for the system administrator. And another place where you might find software installed is under the op directories, the /opt for optional software. But anyway, you could change where the software is going to be installed using the --prefix equals option, that parameter. And you might say prefix equals /home/dan/ IRCD. For instance, if I wanted to just try out a newer version of an IRC server, instead of me installing it into my USR local directory, I'm just going to put it into my home directory. All the files are going to be installed underneath that IRCD directory in the directory structure, and it's going to be configured to run out of there. The software is going to look for the libraries that can install with it or any other shared files in that location. So when you provide the prefix file, typically what ends up happening is it'll create the libraries under the lib directory under the prefix. It'll create the binaries under the bin directory, the header files under the include directory under that prefix directory. So, you know, you go in there, you'll see a bin directory, and in there will be the executable. You see a library directory or lib directory, and in there will be the library. So you get the picture right there. And you can set the prefix pretty much anywhere you want to, although, again, I recommend either your home directory, an op directory, you know, a testing directory or USR local. Don't go installing it in, like, dev or temp, because you're just going to mess things up, and it's not, you know, not a good idea to do stuff like that. The configuration script should also take other parameters. For instance, if there's a requirement, let's say, again, we're back to Frozen Bubble. You're installing Frozen Bubble. Frozen Bubble requires Perl SDL. You don't have Perl SDL, so you go and install it in your home directory. And I think it also requires SDL net. So you go and install that, and it's in your home directory. Well, when you run the configuration script for Frozen Bubble, it's not going to find those requirements because it's looking in the standard locations for those libraries. So you're going to have to look at the actual configuration file, and it's going to ask, you know, there might be an option in there that says, like, --with-sdl-dir equals, and it'll be a path to the SDL file or libraries that are required for installation, and it'll look in that path and verify that you do meet the required dependencies before the package can be built. There are instances when you may not find a configuration file in the sources. You might find a file called autogen.sh, and again, typically that's an executable file It should have the executable bit set on it. So just like you run configure, you can run autogen sh, and it'll build the configuration file based upon your system, and then it'll run that, which will create the make file necessary. Another instance, you might not find either one of those. You might find an iMake file in there. Now, iMake is going to require you to run what's called XMKMF, and that'll take the iMake file in there in that directory and build a make file from it. So once you run the configuration scripts necessary, it should create a make file in that same directory that you can begin to proceed with the installation process. Now, barring not seeing any of those scripts to create a configuration file, read the documentation, because sometimes if this is a software that's going to install itself on multiple platforms, they might have customized make files or example make files in a subdirectory, whereas you just pull, like, you go in there, you'll find a makefile.linux or a makefile.win32 or a makefile.netbsd, and you just take the make file for your system and copy it into the source directory, through the source, and manually edit that make file to suit your system. In addition to the documentation that's included with the software sources, look at the makefile too after it's been created, or if you're using one that's at the top level, and there might be some more information on things you need to tweak in there by using a text editor. But primarily, most of the software is going to have that configure file in there for you to really begin going. If you're looking at compiling some mono software, or you know, something like that goes outside of the standard configure, like for instance, I pulled down Diva, the video editor, about 2 weeks ago, and in order for me to compile the sources for Diva, I had to run use the SCONS build system. So I had to have SCONS on my system, and instead of running configure, you know, I ran SCONS and make. I just ran SCONS, and it built the software. You know, configured it, built it for the system. So again, and that was something I saw in the install. So there are some unique situations, but by and large, you're going to find a configure file in there. Once your configuration is done, you've tweaked it to where you wanted to add any special parameters to it, you then simply type in make. Now, by and large, that's what you're going to do, run make. But there are some instances when you might want to do like make test, or there's make world, or make a specific type of build. And that will be listed in the installation or the README file. But you know, most of the time you're just going to run make, and at that point it's going to compile all the software, and you know, provided everything's hunky dory, it's going to successfully compile that software, and you're going to be pretty much on your way to the next step, which is installation. Now, if your compilation fails during the make process, at that point you're going to have to look at the error. You're going to have to start searching on the forums or the, you know, facts or documentation on the website, or reading news groups to see where, you know, where the problem is. If this is a common error, you know, hopefully there's a fix for your distribution or for your version that you're compiling it under. Barring not finding anything on the web or any of the solutions working, look to see if there's been a bug report filed. If it's a small project, you might want to contact the person in charge of the project, the maintainer. For instance, we had a problem installing QDVD Author at one point on Slackware, or actually I had a problem on under Arch at one time, and you know, I sent the information off to the author, the developer of QDVD Author, and within like an hour I had a response. He said, hey, download this, I fixed the sources. So, you know, report those errors if you can, or in the proper process as per the software's website. So if the make file succeeds, the next step is to install the software, typically to install it. Some software you could actually run from the sources directory. Typically, you know, it may not work out the way you expected, but you know, you're going to have to install it. Now, to install the software, 90% of the time you run a make install. So after you do a make all, make world, make whatever, you're going to do make install. And at this point, you're going to have to be a super user if you're installing it anywhere other than like your home directory or a data directory that you have writable access to, or maybe the temp directory. Although I don't know why you'd be installing it in temp. But anyway, you're going to have capability of installing it, you know, permissions to install it into that directory. There is another parameter that you can pass at this point to the make process. And again, just like the configure process where you can pass the prefix directory, you could do the same thing for the make install dash s prefix equals. And what that actually does then is for instance, if I said make install dash dash prefix equals slash home slash dan slash IRCD, it's going to install as it would, typically under the USR local directory. It's going to install that, but in that prefix directory, and build the directory structure from there. So it's going to be in bin directory under there and a lib directory under there. So it's going to bypass the USR local typical location and install it. Now that does not always work. Sometimes it'll fail out because it might be hard-coded to not only install stuff in the USR local, but maybe into the Etsy directory. So it's not going to like having to, it'll take the prefix directory for the standard stuff, but then it'll try and dump something into the Etsy directory, and you might not have permissions. Doing the prefix directory on some of the software may give you a better feel for what software is being installed, where it's going, and what's being done to it. So, you know, it has its benefits. Sometimes, like Slackware, you can make Slackware packages pretty easily when you use the install prefix equals directory to make your top-level build and, pull the packages together from there. That's one thing to do. But barring that, you're going to change the root and just do sudo make install. Now, at this point, you're going to get the software on your system. And because you're not using a package management system, you're pretty much left to the fact that if you want to remove this software, you could do either one of two things. You could find out all the files that were installed and manually delete them, which is a pain in the butt, or you can keep the sources around and later on run what's called make uninstall, which will uninstall the sources. Now, there's a mixed bag of results here, okay? Be aware of this. Is if you did some change the standard directory software is installed, and you deleted your source files or your actually compiled source files, and you just kept the archive around, you go to extract the archive, and you go in there and say, well, I want to uninstall this, and run make install, it might not be successful, because that process, at that point, the standard default sources may not be configured properly for where you actually installed the software to remove it from its installed locations. You might have to rerun the configure script. You might actually even have to rerun the entire make process before you can actually successfully run make uninstall. If make uninstall does not work, or it says, you know, there is no option to uninstall, try make remove. Sometimes they use make remove. If that doesn't work, if neither one of those works, well, then you're going to have to manually remove the software, which could be a real pain in the butt. Again, that might be a good reason to run, you know, recompile the software and then make install into a prefix so you know exactly what files you need to uninstall. Look in that prefix directory for the sublevels and files and where they're installed and what you actually need to remove, because there could be some differently named libraries and header files and all sorts of stuff and configuration files that you're going to have to remove, shared files, stuff in a shared directory. So that's one step. Another step, which I talked about in a previous twat, was to use a utility like check install. Check install is primarily for Slackware, Debian, and RPM-based systems, and it allows you to create a package for your package system from the sources. So you just run check install, make install, and it will build. It'll do the installation process and, you know, take all those files and archive them up into your package management system. I don't think it supports Arch, but it does a pretty good job. Now, check install, while it's a great utility, it's probably not a tool that you want to build a package for a system and then put it up under a repository for the world to use. It's great for single general use, but maybe not for the rest of the world. I've heard sometimes they have permission issues and stuff like that, but it's a handy utility if you're compiling your own software. You know, those are the two main ways. Barring all that, learn how to use or how to build packages for your package management system. Each Package management system is well documented on how to build your own packages or compile sources and turn them into packages. It's not that hard, but it requires some reading. So that's basically my tips there for installing packages or software from the source. Enjoy those, and it's always fun to compile your own software. It gives a little thrill and a little more control, and you actually feel like you did something valuable on your system there instead of just playing games or surfing porn. There's probably a whole lot of other stuff I missed in there. I know I neglected to say that when you run the configure script and you do the help for the configure script, you're going to notice stuff, not just changing system directories or installation directories, but there's different things you can turn on and off. For instance, if you were compiling mPlayer, you might want to enable stuff like with the Win32 codecs, with QuickTime, with or without DivX support, where some of that stuff is. You can disable certain things like debugging, or disable like dynamically linked libraries and create statically linked instead. There's all sorts of stuff you can do. And after you do your own, you know, first couple of compiles successfully and get the hang of it, you know, you'll be tweaking yourself all the way. So I want to thank you very much for sticking with me on this TWAT podcast. Remember, TWAT is a community-based project, always looking for more support and more contributors, because the more people we have, the more the merrier, and the more we all learn. You have a great day, and take it easy. Happy compiling.
Tom Cruise is so in love with Katie. At least all his people tell him so. And while he thinks that she's a very special lady, it's probably not the way he'd choose to go. But a lifetime of longing looks would cause too much distraction. Good thing that he's not gay anymore. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise crazy. Just be glad it's him, not you. If you had Tom Cruise's troubles, you might be Tom Cruise crazy too. You'd flash your big white shiny smile, you'd buy expensive shoes, but you'd be the only man on earth who couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise. Oh no, you couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise. Getting older, he knows he'll never be that young again. And when Tom Cruise looks back over his shoulder, he sees a thousand younger leading men. And he knows someday he'll have to play an old retarded grandpa. Well, someone younger plays his sexy son. Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise crazy. Just be glad it's him, not you. If you had Tom Cruise's troubles, you might be Tom Cruise crazy too. You'd flash your big white shiny smile, you'd buy expensive shoes, but you'd be the only man on earth who couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise. Oh no, you couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise hopes somewhere there's a place for him, 'cause he's not of this world anymore. Somewhere in some secluded castle, poor Tom Cruise sits staring at the wall. Outside world is always such a hassle. Sometimes he won't go out at all. There are millions who know his name. Everybody loves him. Why is it that he feels so alone? Tom Cruise is Tom Cruise crazy. Just be glad it's him, not you. You might be Tom Cruise crazy too. You'd flash your big white shiny smile, you'd buy expensive shoes,
but you'd be the only man on earth who couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise. Oh no, you couldn't enjoy Tom Cruise.